This is a podfic of the work Borders and Horizontal Lines, We're Alone But Side by Side, by Reverie, CL410, read by Daisy Day Versions. The fandom for this work is Modazisha, or The Untamed. Rating, teen and up, and the creator chooses not to use archive warnings. The relationship is Lanchi Chen / Niaming Jue. Some additional tags for alternate universe canon divergence. This was a 1K prompt bill that got hijacked by my love for world building. So sorry. And implied Wangxian, blink and you'll miss it. Summary. In Niaming Jue's defense, he hadn't almost dropped Baxia because Prince Lan had smiled at him. It was because he'd stepped close, looked at him from beneath long, dark lashes, and murmured, "Prince Nie, you're even bigger than I remember." Who does that? Maybe he was trying to provoke a chi deviation. If so, Niaming Jue thought darkly, he was doing a very good job. Author's Notes, for Owl Tales. Prompt fill for Owl Tales for the Nie Lan Gacha for Gaza event. I hope you like it. Prompt, Prince Lanchi Chen and Prince Niaming Jue are enemies, hailing from different kingdoms who are at war with each other. Niaming Jue is a fierce and steady warrior, intelligent and cunning, suddenly meeting his match with Lanchi Chen, who is just as intelligent and cunning. Also, Lanchi Chen is like low-key a little shit, always egging Niaming Jue on in battle, flirting with him to see if he breaks. And Niaming Jue is totally falling for it. Bonus points if Niaming Jue thinks his love / affections for Lanchi Chen is his heartburn or something, LMAO. Also, featuring a couple OCs for my other fics, SOG and Dreams of Dawn, because the Nie sect has, checks notes, -2 women. Reader's notes. I'm also doing this for the Nie Lan Gacha for Gaza. And this one is going out to King Hiller, who gave a creator's choice. And I decided to record this one written by Reverie. I saw the summary and I was like, this one. Yes, this is what we're doing. So I hope you enjoy. I'm doing this as an ice cold read, which means I haven't read the story before, and I'm going to do limited to no editing. I'm not going to have commentary in the middle of the story, as some people do, but if I have any thoughts, I'll save them to the end. Anyway, let's get started. This war was not going as expected, not in terms of victories or losses. Qinghe Nie's shift in strategy had refined an already formidable army into a battering ram at the front lines. The new tactical approach used the Nie soldiers' raw power so effectively that they could take on forces twice their size and win. Niaming Jue was careful not to overreach. They never seized more ground than they could defend. Instead, they shattered enemy lines with a small but lethal unit, pushing the enemy back step by step, and then held the line until reinforcements poured in to fortify the new border. At first, most of the soldiers chafed under a defense-based strategy, the complete opposite of their traditional battle methods, and viewed with no little disdain. Until, about 3 uninterrupted months of victorious battles and minimal casualties. They'd made more progress, won more ground, than the past 3 generations of Qinghe leaders combined. Every soldier knew that strategy shifted with the landscape, and Qinghan Ye had finally adapted with the rest. But the new Gusu Lan strategy was weird, baffling, frustrating. Niaming Jue shouldered his way into the temporary command center, acknowledging the guards' deep salutes with a clipped nod. His cousins still carrying on the same damn argument they had started mid-battle, followed only a step behind as he ducked into the tent. Nie Huaisong and Bai Yunqi looked up in sync, and their pine-green armored robes, similar delicate frames and features, they could not be mistaken for anything but close blood relations.
Daga, Nie Huaisong huffed. It's about time.
No, I'm fine, Huaisong. Thank you for your concern, he said, tone dry as dust.
I know you're fine. You sent a message after the battle.
Well, maybe an assassin got lucky between then and now, Niaming Jue said mildly, busy tugging on the strings of his arm bracer, flexing his fingers when the ties finally came loose. He slid the dented metal off his forearm to reveal a blue-black bruise spanning wrist to elbow where he'd blocked in a lawn soldier's wild swing.
That'll be the day, Nie Wei Yin scoffed, arms crossed over her chest.
No one is going to come back for another fight after you've just stomped their entire force into the dirt. They've had enough of... Nie Huaisong waved a hand in their general direction. Nie Mingjue peered down at the grisly state of his armor, glanced back to his cousins and the sabers strapped to their backs, blood-flecked hilts rising over their shoulders, and he had to admit, Huaisong had a point. Some of the Lan soldiers approached their height, but none of them carried the bulk of most Nie fighters and the overpowering brute strength that accompanied it. If Gusu's army couldn't even get close to him in the chaos of a flat-out battle, they had to know that winning a one-on-one fight was about as likely as flying to the moon.
I don't know, Huaisong,
Nie Zongwei said. Nie Mingjue didn't even have to look around to know a sly grin was aimed at his back. The new Lan tactic just might work.
What new tactic? Nie Huaisong demanded. I haven't heard anything about it.
As head of their intelligence network, his spies usually caught wind of any major changes before the armies clashed. Except this time, they didn't. This time, they'd all completely failed to notice a very significant change in the Gusu Lan ranks.
Ask your brother,
Nie Zongwei teased, elbowing Nie Mingjue in the side.
He's the one who had to fight the first Jade of Lan.
Again?
Bai Yunxi looked up from the map on the table, frowning.
This is the third time the first Jade of Lan has arrived unexpectedly. Is he following you?
Oh, he definitely is, Auntie,
Nie Huiyin said, cheerfully throwing him under the cart.
He didn't spare anyone else a look, just went straight for Mingjuezhe.
Nie Huaisong, who possessed the instincts of a bloodhound for anything Nie Mingjue would find annoying, squinted at his discomfited expression and asked,
"Did you win the fight?"
"Yes," he paused. "No." He paused again. "I don't know. It was really unclear."
Fully committed to being a traitor and a snitch, Nie Huaiyin nodded sagely and informed them,
It was unclear because the prince smiled at him and Ming Jue almost drops Boxia on his feet. Nie Ming Jue pinched the bridge of his nose and told himself that he couldn't murder one of his lieutenants in the middle of a campaign. In his defense, it wasn't because Prince Lan had smiled at him. It was because he'd stepped close. So close, Nie Ming Jue could see the faint cloud pattern on his forehead ribbon. Looked at him from beneath long dark lashes and murmured, "Prince Nie, you're bigger than I remember." Who does that? To make matters even more confusing, the first jade hadn't pressed his obvious advantage when Nie Ming Jue had jerked to a stop mid-swing to gape at him. Which wasn't as bad as their very first interaction, or the second, the memory of which he very firmly barricaded himself against. Though it still didn't prevent the first wet dream of his entire life from happening, to his eternal horror. So, it was no wonder Nie Ming Jue's heart did weird things when the first jade so much as glanced his way. Maybe he was trying to provoke a chi deviation? What else explained his bizarre behavior? Of course, Nie Ming Jue would not have shared the specifics of these meetings with any of his family members, because they would only tease him relentlessly, and then he'd be forced to murder them all for his own sanity. Boxia tremored against his back at the mere concept of more killing. He rubbed his chest, grimacing at the low-level hum in the back of his mind, flared. His link to Boxia always grew louder after a battle, a symptom of the sheer power bleeding off of her in heavy waves, strong enough that bystanders could feel it in their hair rising on their necks and arms, in the ache of their clenched jaws and the brittle tension in their shoulders. She was growing too strong. Years wading knee-deep through death had only fed her bloodlust, leaving her increasingly volatile, sharp-tempered and biting for days after a battle. It took every bit of Nie Ming Jue's power and focus to keep her restrained. At this rate, he thought with a flicker of grim amusement, the first Jade of Lan would be too late to provoke a fatal chi deviation. Boxia would beat him to it, and then probably try to eat him too. Bai Yunqi silently studied him, eyes lingering on Boxia. Nie Ming Jue kept to the other side of the table, not wanting the blood and grime smeared all over his skin to stain her or Huaisong, or give Boxia an opportunity to lash out. But Bai Yunqi reached out in silent command. Nie Ming Jue clenched his jaw, apprehensive but obeyed. He knew better than to argue with his mother. "Set her down, Ajue," she said quietly. Nie Ming Jue grimaced as he placed Boxia on the closest sword stand, barely restraining a hiss at the stinging, tingling sensation running up his arm when he tried to pry his fingers loose from her blade. Bai Yunqi touched a single fingertip to the pommel and sternly told the saber, "Settle down." At the direct order from her maker, Boxia reluctantly released him. But while she'd stopped pummeling him with an incessant, insatiable hunger for blood and gore and death, their link remained red, pulsing aura rooted deeply inside him,
staining his skin and soul and spirit by degrees, until one day he would be unrecognizable. The saber spirit issue was hardly new. Qinghe Nie had started looking for solutions to the saber issue when it became clear that their cultivation path led to the sabers driving them to madness, and eventually a violent death. But the founding generation had established the path that made Qinghe cultivators unmatched in strength. None of the Nie descendants could bring themselves to destroy their foundation. Besides being a betrayal to their ancestors, they would have to rebuild from nothing and would be unable to even defend themselves in the meantime. So, generation after generation of Nie cultivators resigning themselves to a premature death, until Nie Mingdui's grandfather took a different approach, allying with a tiny clan of master craftsmen. While metal workers and ironsmiths were not uncommon, smiths capable of forging a spiritual sword were vanishingly rare. And the Bai clan of Heijiang specialized in forging spiritual weapons. A spiritual blade crafted with a specific metal blend designed to absorb energy, harnessed the flow of energy that a cultivator cycled through it. Over time, the energy in the sword would develop sentience and eventually its own spirit capable of storing energy reserves, allowing cultivators to control their swords over distances and without direct physical contact. Stronger cultivators could circulate more energy through the sword, enhancing the sword's capacity to retain energy, which in turn increased its sentience and made the sword easier to control. But Qinghe Nie's cultivation method channeled dark energy of the beasts and evil spirits through their sabers to make it more powerful. Compared to sword spirits, the lingering resentful energy corrupted the saber's path to sentience and spirit development. The saber spirits defined their entire existence by exterminating evil, answering to only one master, evolving into zealots with only one purpose, to eradicate evil. Sabers didn't start out with uncontrollable killing intent, but after years of absorbing resentment, feeding on it to grow stronger, the sabers required more and more dark energy to appease their hunger. They started growing restless between hunts, agitated without anything to eradicate, until their masters learned to suppress the frenzy. But the resentment also affected their masters, slowly eroding the integrity of their bond, creating a feedback loop steeped in dark energy that made them both irritable and unstable, propelling them eventually to a fatal chi deviation. The sabers refused to recognize another master, so savagely rejecting all other cultivators and subsequently left without anyone to control them. The sabers' unfulfilled craving to eradicate evil drove them into an unstoppable, murderous rage. When his grandfather had folded the Bai clan under the Qinghe Nie protective wing, asking them to lend their skill and expertise to his mission, the Bai clan swordsmiths focused on the spiritual sabers rather than the Qinghe Nie's specific cultivation techniques. After a few decades of trial and error, several modifications to Qinghe Nie's cultivation practices, and a series of incremental breakthroughs, they found a way to soothe the saber spirits, not subdue exactly, but to soften the vicious repercussions so they were survivable,
The method required the cultivator's involvement from the very start, infusing the spiritual energy with the metal as it was melted down and shaped. Then throughout the quenching and tempering process until it had soaked into every element of the final product. This, they discovered, ensured that the eventual formation of the saber spirit originated from behind an inlaid protective barrier against the resentful energy the saber absorbed. It meant the saber spirit had a strong, more stable foundation, which allowed it to better resist or counteract the side effects of resentment. A saber spirit not born solely from dark energy was not immune to it, but being rooted in spiritual energy mitigated the residual effects, so the saber was not utterly consumed after only a few years. But eventually, the saber would absorb enough resentment to overpower the ingrained spiritual energy barrier. The goal there was a balance. If you could keep the master stable, they could keep the saber's agitation suppressed. Regularly reinforcing the spiritual energy barrier worked right up until they became too impaired by the resentful energy's effects to circulate clean energy through the saber. After that, achieving balance required another person. Specifically, someone bonded closely enough with the saber's master that the saber spirit would accept their mingled spiritual energy. Often, that meant extensive medication with a spouse or cultivation partner, but family members or close friends consistently worked as well. The type of relationship seemed to matter far less than its value to the saber's master. Of course, nothing involving sabers could ever be so easy. Close bonds weren't effective if both the cultivators wielded sabers. Both of them carried lingering resentment energy in their meridians, so purifying either spiritual energy became nearly impossible. The power differential mattered too. Niming Jue had cultivated faster than anyone in Qinghan Nie's history, Boxia's power expanding at an exponential rate alongside him. Another cultivator couldn't counteract the buildup of resentful energy unless they rivaled his strength, which he had realized early on when he'd started outpacing senior cultivators twice his age by the time he was 14. And then, to Qinghan Nie's collective dismay, the saber spirits started to have opinions about which bonds were acceptable. Theoretically, the purifying nature of those close bonds worked because the sabers had been forged by their master's spiritual energy. The saber accepted those close bonds because it was simply an extension of the master. In practice, saber spirits occasionally rejected the mingled spiritual energy based on an unfathomable list of criteria. To the surprise of no one, Boxia had proven exceptionally discriminating. Niming Jue was only still alive because Bai Yuxi had personally forged Boxia, and the saber seemed wary enough of her maker to cooperate. Maybe she'd sensed the way that Niming Jue's worst days, Bai Yuxi regarded the saber with an expression like she would melt Boxia down for scrap metal if Niming Jue winced one more time. It didn't improve Boxia's reluctance to accept any and all bonds, but it took the edge off of the escalating side effects, if only temporarily. Now, closing in on his 23rd birthday, Niming Jue had mostly resigned himself to the inevitable, a thought he kept to himself, because the response could be worse than the resentful energy and degrading Saber bond, actively killing him. Nie Huaisong would either burst into tears or start shouting and throwing things. His cousins would make dangerous and increasingly unhinged attempts to save him anyway, and Bai Yunxi would take the chances of causing permanent spiritual damage and melt Boxia into a set of candlesticks or horseshoes or something. No thank you to all of that. Boxia thrummed against the sword stand as if in agreement. She is really mad today, Nie Huaisong said, eyeing Boxia distrustfully.
She is just hungry.
That's worse, Daga. Nie Huaiyin smirked.
She can smell your fear, Song Song.
You're not funny. But he edged a little further away and cast an uncertain look at Nie Mingjue.
He shrugged. She doesn't respect anyone who doesn't carry a weapon.
The familiar argument was nothing more than a half-hearted jab now. After generations of war, the Saber Spirits have grown progressively stronger and more violent. He didn't want that for Huaisong. I carry a weapon, Huaisong protested. I have daggers and two war fans.
Yeah, a lot of good that will do against a sword. Remind me, how have you lived this long without learning to use a saber?
Hard work and dedication, Nie Huaisong said primly. Nie Mingjue rolled his eyes. Besides, I'm pretty good with my fans.
It's Boxia, Songer, Nie Zongwei told him kindly. She doesn't respect anything less than a full battalion or an actual demon.
Sometimes not even that.
Nie Huaiyin held up a hand to count the few opponents Boxia acknowledged as worth their attention, which, as per usual, devolved almost immediately into an argument. Everyone had different opinions about whether sheer contempt or unmitigated disdain or seething hate qualified as respect. She grows more volatile every day, Bai Yunxi observed, voice low and to keep from carrying. I do not believe simple transfusions and meditation will appease Boxia's hunger for much longer. He met her gaze squarely.
I know.
Unspoken was the heavy knowledge that Boxia would eventually consume him, effectively killing them both. They were too intertwined. He'd poured his soul into her making. And destroying her or forging another saber was unthinkable. Bai Yuxi's mouth tightened.
Anyan, we knew this was coming, he said gently. That's why I haven't ascended to the throne yet.
As the spouse of the previous sect leaders, ruling fell to Bai Yuxi. Since Nie Mingjue was no older than 13 at the time. Her authority seemed tenuous at first, marriage or not, she wasn't a Nie, and that mattered to more people than they'd expected. But Nie Mingjue had emphatically thrown his weight behind her, and the discontented murmuring gradually stopped. Bai Yuxi was vocal about her intentions to step down the moment Nie Mingjue decided to ascend, but he insisted on waiting until the war ended. It would mean less upheaval for Qinghan Nie if he was killed on the battlefield or succumbed to resentful energy poisoning his mind and body. I promised your mother and father I would protect you. Keep you and the sect safe until you were ready to ascend, Bai Yunxi said, then looked at him with so much intensity he startled. Don't make me a liar, Ajway. He offered a small smile.
I will do my best, Anyan.
She narrowed her eyes. Do better. He couldn't help the soft huff of laughter.
Yes, Anyan.
Bayou Shi tisked and turned to appraise the map pinned to the table. Nie Mingjue skimmed a glance over the markers, leaning forward when a change caught his attention.
Gusu's western forces withdrew?
The conversation behind him abruptly cut off. Nie Huaisong made an affirming noise. Moments later, Nie Mingjue's cousins crowded around him to stare at the map, then at Huaisong for an explanation. Apparently, there's some diabolical genius in Yunmeng giving them trouble.
Diabolical genius?
Nie Mingjue repeated with all the skepticism that deserved. Nie Huaisong shrugged. He's smart enough that Gusu dispatched the second jade to deal with him personally. There was a low whistle from Nie Hui Yin. Nie Zongwei's eyebrows almost touched his hairline. No wonder the first jade is nipping at our heels. Nie Zongwei nudged him. With Yunmengzheng contained, or soon to be anyway, we're the biggest threat. Somehow, Nie Mingjue didn't think that was the first jade's motivation. But he supposed they would know for sure soon enough. Supposedly, all the fighting started about a century ago, when Qishan Wen imploded after a civil war, followed shortly by a violent power struggle. The remnants of leadership scrambled desperately to maintain a hold on Wen territory, while their empire crumpled and the other provinces started eyeing their borders. With one tyrant dead, a dozen more tried to rise to his place. Every branch family and distant relation made a play for the throne, all professing their only goal was to uphold the glory and might of Qishan Wen. The problem was that they couldn't stop killing each other long enough to gain any momentum, let alone march under a single banner. Every 20 years or so, another leader stepped forward and seemed like they were going to succeed, until they joined the rest of the Qishan's dead. Wen Rohan had come the closest of anyone who'd tried. Qishan's armies swelled under his rule, nearly tripling inside from their pitiful state. The other provinces, unused to facing an army with disciples and resources, quickly realized Wen Rohan intended to turn the tables on them and start chipping away at their borders, killing and conquering until he could challenge the emperor himself. But before that, he called for a peace summit, a temporary truce so the leaders could find a path forward that didn't involve slaughtering each other. Qishan Wen, fighting a war on all fronts for nearly a century, had suffered worse losses than all others combined. Why wouldn't they want peace? It wasn't an outlandish concept. There were already tentative agreements being discussed between individual provinces, the closest to peace terms for the first time in living memory. Why not expand those independent agreements and end the fighting for good? So the provinces, Qinghe, Gusu, Yunmeng, Lanling, all tired of fighting an inherited war, agreed to a peace conference held in a neutral location. None of the representatives returned. Not Nie Mingjue's father, not Qing Hen Jun, not Jiang Fengmin, not Jingguanshan. Instead, they and their battalion escorts were massacred. All but a single soldier from each province left alive only so they could carry the message home. Had they not prepared for the possibility, Wen Rohan would have won the war in a single stroke. But instead, he had been nearly decimated in the first campaign, not expecting the ironclad resistance from soldiers led by what he'd assumed were the grieving, hastily appointed replacements of their leaders. Ni Mingjue's father, Qingha Nie's messenger, had wept, was the first to die in the ambush. The backbone of Qingha Nie severed in one fell swoop, a death designed to crush his people's spirits. Instead, he just made them angry. Devastated but so hungry for revenge, they became nearly unstoppable overnight. Wen Rohan faced similar ferocity from Lan Qiren and Madame Lan of Gusu, Madame Jin of Lanling, and Yu Ziyuan of Yunmeng. But it was Nie Mingjue's mother who punched through the Wen army's lines and faced Wen Rohan alone. Nie Mingjue's mother who cut down a tyrant to avenge her husband's murderer. Then, days later, she succumbed to her injuries, and the cycle began all over again. So now, Nie Mingjue fought a war that he didn't start in a city he didn't want, but couldn't surrender without appearing weak or unfilial. His mother had captured Shangqiu in her relentless push towards the Nightless City, and now it was Nie Mingjue's responsibility to defend it. A heavy fog had rolled in at some point during the night, giving the white-clad Lan a distinctive advantage. Visibility was shit. His soldiers were sluggish from minimal sleep, and Baxia was fighting him like a tiger on a leash. The first prince of Gusu was somewhere close. Nie Mingjue caught brief glimpses of him through the mist, a blur of pure white that moved like smoke through the city. He was poetry in motion with a sword in his hand, a perfect blend of grace and blistering intensity that made him all the more beautiful. He was also an unrepentant nuisance. When he wasn't deliberately deflecting Baxia so that he could brush their hands together, he was flitting in and out of Nie Mingjue's vision, his own personal ghost haunting him across the battlefield. Nie Mingjue swore under his breath when a shape twisted out of the fog so close he could smell the jasmine oil in their hair. He intercepted the sword angling for his thigh and stepped swiftly out of range as his opponent whirled around. The first jade of Gusu grinned at him, wild and genuine, and Nie Mingjue's mouth actually went dry. Infuriating. Nie Mingjue narrowed his eyes.
"You again. You must have heard me cursing your name."
"Oh?" The first jade blinked at him, tone innocent. "Were you thinking of me, Prince Nie?" His eyes are tawny brown, so light that they appeared gold in direct sunlight, shone with humor.
That light of laughter wasn't malicious or mocking, but the man's sheer friendliness was appalling. It made Nie Mingjue want to shake him until he acted like a normal person. They were enemies. Nie Mingjue adjusted his grip on Boxia, casting a quick look around in case this was a distraction from an actual attack. But there seemed to be a wide space around them, the fighting moving further and further away. He didn't even see the unit that usually kept close to the prince during battles. Personal guards, he'd concluded, and almost felt sorry for the poor bastards tasked with keeping up with the first jade. In response to his teasing, Nie Mingjue frowned repressively.
You make yourself hard to forget, Prince Lan.
Qi-Ten.
What?
Aren't we past formalities at this point? You should use my name, Lan Qi-Ten.
Nie Mingjue stared at him, bewildered. The first jade's, Lan Qi-Chen's, mouth curved when the silence stretched.
You make no sense,
Nie Mingjue finally said, frustrated. Boxia hummed in response, eagerly warm in his hand. Lan Qi-Chen just laughed, and, because there was clearly something wrong with him, appeared delighted when Nie Mingjue scowled at him.
Prince Lan, surely my thoughts haven't been so impenetrable.
He darted forward to trade a few harmless blows.
Oh, I did the wrong voice. Prince Nie, surely my thoughts haven't been so impenetrable.
He darted forward to trade a few harmless blows.
Stop playing around,
Nie Mingjue said, which he'd intended to be a command, but mostly sounded plaintive. His heart gave a jolt when Lan Qi-Chen's smile shifted into something sharper, an edge of challenge glimmering just under the surface. Heat unfurled in his belly like a flower in bloom, unfamiliar and unexpected. And then they were moving. A blur of sound and motion, so closely matched in skill it became almost a dance. They were both pulling blows like they would in training, ignoring openings to maim or kill, and at some point he'd stopped watching for the trick and relaxed into the easy rhythm of their movements. A lifetime knowing nothing but war meant fighting became mundane, but this was definitely stupid and probably irresponsible and irrefutably, impossibly, fun. He bit back a smile and ignored Boxia urging him for more. That deep-set hum growing louder and louder until he could feel it buzzing in his teeth. The vibrations echoing through his skull and giving him a nasty headache. This ache was familiar, though. He knew how to lock down the pain so it didn't distract him during the fight. Instead, let it carry him forward. Fuel each strike in block and blow. Their swords crossed with a bone-jarring clash, metal shrieking as the blades slid against each other. Nie Mingjue stepped close, using his slight height advantage as leverage, pressing with all his strength to bear Lan Qi-Chen to the ground. Lan Qi-Chen, wavering briefly, back foot sliding and threatening to buckle, his free hand moving in the corner of Nie Mingjue's vision. He realized too late what was happening, too slow to move out of reach, heart beating a frantic pulse, because no,
He couldn't touch Boxia. She would lash out, hurt him. And he didn't want that. Was sick and tired of everything ending in bloodshed. Lan Xichen's hand closed around Boxia's hilt. The narrow space above Nia Mingjue's grip, and Boxia went quiet. Stunned into silence, Nia Mingjue almost missed Lan Xichen flowing right into the next strike. They realized at the exact same moment that he wouldn't be able to dodge, too busy staring at his saber like an idiot. Alarmed, Lan Xichen redirected his sword with impossibly quick reflexes, but he couldn't stop his momentum in time. Nia Mingjue braced for the cold bite of a blade into his rib cage, yelped when Lan Xichen slammed into him instead and sent them both sprawling to the ground, sword and saber falling nearby with a deafening clatter. Because his luck was nothing if not consistent, Nia Mingjue took the brunt of the fall, Lan Xichen landing hard on his chest, an elbow catching him in the stomach and forcing all of the air from his lungs. He wheezed, grateful that Lan Xichen moved off of him to kneel at his side instead, looking him over with worried eyes. "Sorry, I'm sorry. I couldn't stop fast enough," he babbled, hands moving uselessly over Nia Mingjue's chest. "Are you all right? Please be all right." The eager expression took him off guard. He fought for breath, intending to offer reassurance and instead letting out a strangled sound when one of those hands drifted low on his belly. Nia Mingjue captured the wandering hand before it drifted into indecent territory. Only then did Lan Xichen seem to notice the rather bold direction of his touch, flushing vibrant pink and uttering a small, "Oh." He did not, however, attempt to take his hand back, letting Nia Mingjue hold him in place until the iron band around his lungs eased. Nia Mingjue heaved a breath, then another, and into the ringing silence around them finally managed, "Ow." Lan Xichen bit his lip contrite. "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to crash into you like that."
"Better than a sword through the gut."
"Undoubtedly," he agreed, then hesitated. Did something happen? You froze?" Nia Mingjue's breath caught for an entirely different reason. His mind was still silent for the first time in almost 7 years. No clamoring, no snarling, no desperate urgency to feed. No wordless demands to indulge in the insatiable killing intent. His bond to Boxia, that steady resonance in the aftermath of her creation, had gone quiet. Not severed, not damaged, just muted, tranquil. Nia Mingjue realized he was taking full breaths for the first time since Boxia had her first taste of blood. No more fire licking at his veins, burning him alive from the inside out. Just the cool touch of a winter breeze, healing all the wounds and scars and chronic aches he's collected over the years. "Is something wrong?" Lan Xichen asked softly.
Nia Mingjue's mouth curled into a helpless smile.
Not anymore.
Lan Jichen ducked his head, but not before Nia Mingjue saw his pleased pink-tinged expression. His heart was pounding. He had to restrain a shiver when Lan Jichen broke his hold only to tangle their fingers together instead. His face felt hot. His whole body felt hot. Was he running a fever? He felt like he was running a fever. Could we, Prince Nie?
Nie Mingjue.
It took a moment to register, but then Lan Jichen's smile lit up his entire face. Nie Mingjue's heart did the same thing again. The sudden swooping sensation. Except now that his bond with Boxia was muted, Nie Mingjue realized several months too late that the violent lurch wasn't spillover from her bloodlust and sheer glee from all the killing. No, it was his own raw attraction that he hadn't even noticed until it all but punched him in the face. Tackling him to the ground was apparently the alternative, which was only a slightly less embarrassing way to discover that he had a crush on the first Jade of Lan. But more importantly, why Song could never, ever find out about this.
Author's Notes. Lan Jichen.
Hi, Uncle. I'm home. Smiley emoji. Have you met my husband?
Lan Jichen, pacing and muttering to himself. It's fine, it's fine. Wang Ji will return soon and talk some sense into him. Lan Wangji returns with something so much worse. Wei Wuxian, it's Wei Wuxian. Lan Jichen, dot dot dot. Lan Jichen. Hell is real and I'm living in it.
Also, I'm offering a gift fic of 10 to 20k words for Fandom Trumps Hate 2025. If you're interested, check out this Tumblr post.
Reader's notes. Ugh, I love this so much. Okay, before I get started talking about the fic, again, this was recorded for the Nylon Gotcha for Gaza. We've now closed the donation period, so if you were hoping to be able to donate to Gaza and you want an excuse to do it, you can't do it for this particular campaign, but if you're listening to this and you're interested in donating, I would encourage you to go to gazaaction.card.co, and they have a whole tracking sheet where they have the different Gotcha for Gazas across different fandoms and where they are in terms of their status and their timelines and all of that good stuff. So please feel free to check them out if you are looking to donate to this cause and you have regrets. You don't have to have regrets. You can find another fandom or another Gotcha for Gaza event that will fulfill those needs for you. So thank you to everyone who donated to our event, and thank you to everyone who donated to past events, and thanks to everyone who will donate in the future. And if you don't have the funds to be able to donate, thanks for listening, amplifying, and doing all the things. Thank you also to Reverie, who not only wrote this fic for the Gotcha for Gaza, but gave me permission to podfic it. I really appreciate you doing that. And if you enjoyed this work, then please consider going back and leaving kudos and comments to the original author on AO3. Now, back to the story. I really enjoyed the world building of this, the different imaginations in terms of how they're at war, but it's just kind of this endless war, and kind of the kind of analysis of what happens when you have a power vacuum, and the intergenerational trauma that this has created. Really, really interesting. As soon as I heard Wenrohan be like, oh yeah, we're going to have a peace summit, I was like, I don't know what's happening next. that's so good. And then, yeah, the part where the Sabres are just like, yeah, we also want to have some sort of choice in who gets to be the one who sues us, right? I was like, I know what Bastia's preference is going to be here, right? And that was so, so good. And the mention that the same is true for demonic energy, right? I was like, ah, this is where the Wangxian subtlety is going to work its way in. And yeah, poor Lan Chiren. But on the other hand, that just means they have, you know, a little peace treaty between two countries. So, you know, his boys did good, right? Yeah, this was so fun. I really loved this. And I love the idea of Lan Chiren just kind of diving in there and being like, I like this one. And I don't know, like, I'd be curious to see the reverse of this, right? The other POV and see what Lan Chiren's perspective is on this and his motivations, right? Is it just like, I really like Nie Mingjue, or is he, you know, what's kind of his thought process here, you know, other than obviously he likes him, but I'd be interested to know his perspective here, right? Because Nie Mingjue just seems to find him so incomprehensible, right? So it'd be fun to kind of get the other end of that, and especially kind of seeing just Nie Mingjue just shutting down in the middle of like a little fight, right? It's really funny to kind of think about what you know, how he might have interpreted some of those moments. And I love the little like snarking between the cousins, and of course, in this world, you know, seeing Nie Mingjue, you know, not wanting Nie Huaisong to take up the saber, and all of those little details, I think is, you know, really, really wonderful. And yeah, and what a lovely ending. I love that. Yeah, they're getting together and they're going to save the world with their love, which is really all you can ask for, right? All right. Anyway, so those were my thoughts. If you made it this far, again, please consider going back and leaving kudos and comments on the original work on AO3. And thanks for listening.